Thanks for listening to CarCast on Podcast One.
I'm Dave Detman, also known as Dr. Gadget. I've got a new podcast called The Big Idea. And every week, I talk to inventors and visionaries who made it big in their respective industries. We'll tackle weekly trending tech, provide inside tips for your success, and go deep dives on the latest and greatest innovations. And I know you're going to love this part. I'll also have plenty of free giveaways. Who doesn't love free stuff? So listen to and follow The Big Idea with me, Dr. Gadget, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podcast One, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Would you love to save money on insurance? Well, of course. Who doesn't love a good deal? Well, when it comes to great rates on insurance for everything, GEICO can help. Insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, RV, even homeowners, condo, and renters coverage. Save even more with a special discount when you bundle coverages. Plus, add the easy-to-use GEICO mobile app and 24-hour roadside assistance, and the switch to GEICO becomes a no-brainer. Switch today and see how you can save. Simply go to geico.com to get a rate quote or contact your local agent. Hello, welcome to CarCast. I'm Matt, the moderator. DeAndrea here with Bill Goldberg. Hey, what's going on? It's been
Gage's 16th birthday week is over. Thank God I can catch up on my sleep.
Birthday week? That's like a 33-year-old chick thing.
Trust me, man, what it turned out to be. It was like a 3-day ass kicking of my sleep pattern, basically. That's what it turned out to be. But hey, he had a good program.
That's good.
And he's driving school every day, which I'm terrified about. But yeah, other than that, we're good.
He's driving the Bronco. I saw the picture of him in the Bronco. He seems very excited about it. I'm sure his friends are digging it. And, you know, and now he's just got to be on his best behavior to keep it, I guess. That's how it works.
Yeah, I hope he takes care of his whip. What the fuck? I mean, that never came out of my
head. Yeah. His whip. I thought we were actually over that term by now. Anyway.
Is that the equivalent of a dad joke?
Yeah.
Geico.
Alistair Weaver from Edmunds.com. Always a pleasure. Welcome back to the show. You're not in the neighborhood this time. You're over the pond. So I appreciate you. You're still joining us.
Thank you. I've gone back to my roots. Just topping up the accent.
Yeah, right.
It's really weird to be in a place where you sound normal.
Yeah. Yeah, that is good. I could see that now. Everyone running around saying Mackie. Mustang Mackie.
Yeah, you no longer sound charming and eloquent.
Yeah. Now you just sound bland and normal like everybody else.
Yeah. How's it feel to be again?
Okay, so we got a bunch to get into. It's been a minute. I know you've been out. You've been driving a handful of cars. There was definitely some things that we've been texting about. We wanted to catch up about, but I want to get started with the Lucid. Yeah, I want to talk a little bit about the Lucid. You got a chance to drive it, and you know, obviously it's new. It's getting a lot of press. You know, some accolades, I guess, but. You know, I understand it's very difficult to make a car from scratch, as I think Rivian is starting to feel, not just making a car, but making a company behind it. So what are your thoughts on Rivian?
Oh, Rivian or Lucid? Lucid.
I'm sorry, Lucid, yeah.
I'm feeling a lack of lucidity there, but another dad joke for you. It's really interesting, Matt, because we waited a long time to get behind the wheel of this thing because we were always adamant that we wanted to do like a full test on it. We didn't just want to drive. I mean, we drove it very briefly back at the launch in September, but we had to wait quite a long time to prize a test car out of them, which we eventually did. And we took it down the track and ran all the numbers on it. And there are so many things about it which are terrific. The packaging, the amount of space that you get for the footprint is so much better than something like a Mercedes EQS. It's fast, it's capable, it's The efficiency is really good. I mean, this was the Dream Air Range Edition, so it's kind of like a PR stunt to get a mega range figure to sort of, you know, create some publicity. But it's still the first car we've had that genuinely did over 500 miles in our independent range test. It 505, I think it was. So there are so many things in its favor, and so many things that you think are potentially really, really stand out and world beating. The challenge we had with it, and we called this out, and we've had various conversations with Lucid afterwards, is there was just a lot of build quality issues. There were some problems with perceived quality, by which I mean like the touchy-feely stuff.
Yeah.
But more pertinently, there was also just a lot of things going wrong, both software and hardware. So sometimes your phone would connect, sometimes it wouldn't, sometimes Spotify would, but mainly it wouldn't. We were actually filming a sequence on an issue with the rear door not shutting properly when the front door completely seized. And if you watch the video on the YouTube channel, we actually captured this in real time. And there was just a series of problems during it. We had the car for a couple of weeks. And there was just a whole bunch of problems that we experienced, software, hardware, perceived quality, build quality. And the whole thing just feels like, you know, it wasn't quite ready. And the car that we had was a very early production car. But, you know, they've been making these things for 7-8 months now. Mm-hmm. And as you say, it's won a bunch of accolades. And most people have driven it and said, you know, it's great. And the fundamentals of this car are superb. But there's also a lot of things that they need to fix and evolve. And as you say, building a new car is incredibly difficult, as Tesla found out, as Rivian is finding out, and particularly as Lucid is finding out. But, you know, being honest about it, the Rivian that we had was in better state than the Lucid that we have. And I'm sure they'll get there. And when they do, the fundamentals are that good that, you know, I'm sure it'll be a winner for them. So, you know, we remain optimistic about it. But right now, there's a bunch of stuff that they need to fix, and quickly.
That aside, tell me a little bit more about the car. How does the car, let's assume the pieces worked, right? Let's just assume they'll be able to get it worked out. You know, obviously they're going to have to, right? It needs to be at least on par with everything else that's out there. What's the competition for this car? And some of the characteristics of the car, like, does it compete with a Mercedes S-Class? It doesn't have to be an electric competition, but some other luxury sedan competition. Where does it stand? Obviously, it's fast. Is it comfortable? Is it easy to use? Does it handle well? Does it stop? Like, how is it as a car? Before we get into it as a car company.
Yeah, sure, and it's. So this is basically a luxury sedan, and you're quite right that we shouldn't just see it as EV rivals now. It's basically a luxury sedan. The car that we had was pushing 180 grand, but actually, you know, it's going to start at, 170 grand, but it's going to start at under 100 eventually. So really what this is lining up against is things like the Mercedes EQS, the Mercedes S-Class, if you want to go down the gas-powered route, new BMW 7 Series and i7, Tesla Model S, which is, of course, aging a little bit now. Porsche Taycan to a certain extent, although it's a slightly different kind of car. So it is a big, comfortable luxury sedan. It's sort of about the size of a Mercedes E-Class, but inside it's as big as a Mercedes S-Class. So they've done a terrific job with the packaging. And then, you know, in common with everybody else, they're also going to bring out an SUV version. That will mm-hmm. be the next. That'll be the next big Lucid model.
You know, I got a chance to look at the car, but I didn't get a chance to get in the car. It was on display and it was kind of like roped off, but the doors were open and stuff. And yeah, to your point, it looks like it's pretty roomy inside. It looks like no real issue with a guy bill size driving that car around.
No, for sure. It's a big, comfortable barge. You have that slight problem on the cars with the big batteries. You still have that slight problem that your knees, if you're in the back, your knees end up round your chin because of the battery pack underneath the floor.
Yeah.
But on the cars with smaller batteries, they're going to do what Porsche does and basically leave a space for your feet. So that problem will be alleviated to some extent. But yeah, I mean, the interior is nicely designed. It's a good sort of blend of screens, but with, you know, some actual physical buttons as well. I think I said in the video that, Lucid is – because the guy who now runs Lucid was Tesla's sort of chief project engineer, and he does the whole car feels like it was designed by an engineer, not by a kind of, you know, mad billionaire.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's an interesting design as well. This weird kind of two-tone kind of roof and body, you know, coloration thing is interesting. And the front of the car, I don't know why, I just keep thinking RoboCop. Like, it just has like that RoboCop kind of helmet kind of thing looking out of the front of the car. But interesting. And when you see it in person, it's sharp looking. It's very futuristic looking. It feels, it seems bigger and lower than just kind of like the stance seems to be, right? When you guys brought it out to your test track, what sort of numbers is it pulling? They brag about it being fast as hell, but it's also massive.
It is, but they were claiming the car that we had was the Range Edition. So when they launched it, they've got something called the Dream Air Performance, which has 1,111 horsepower. So that's more than a Tesla Plaid. But then they also have the Range Edition, which is 933 horsepower, but is running on 19-inch skinny tires designed to all about hitting that kind of that range figure that becomes the headline then that everybody talks about. So we hit 505 miles, but this is probably the most under-tired car that I've ever been involved in. They, you know, you've got 933 horsepower, skinny little all-terrain tires, so you could light all four wheels up very easily by squeezing on the throttle. So you get wheel spin all four wheels, even with all the gubbins going off, and even with it weighing as much as it does. And the front of the car comes up almost like a powerboat. You know, if you get into a speedboat, powerboat, and you know before it sort of gets on a plane, and the whole front of the thing comes up. It was exactly like that, and you experience that a little bit in fast cars. With the weight transfer, but I've never experienced anything like that. It was like being in a powerboat, and you know, the braking and this one's kind of a PR stunt, because you've got the performance edition's all about going fast, the range edition's always all about going far. So when you try and put it on a test track, things elements of it fall apart. So it was you know, the braking and the ultimate grip weren't necessarily great. And Lucid actually came to us and said, right, what we want you to do is do the range test on the 19-inch rims with the all-season tires, then do the performance stuff. We're going to give you some 21s or some 22s with stickier tires, then you can do all the rest of the performance stuff. And we're like, well, we're not going to do that because, you know, maybe Jay Leno does or somebody, you know, but he's got guys to fit tires for him. You know, nobody else keeps a set of rims in the garage and then swaps them when they want to go fast or swaps them if they want to go fast. So we said, okay, if the standard issue is 19-inch skinny all-terrain tires, then let's test it on that, and that's what we did.
And how'd you do? Is it quick?
It doesn't hook up, but you've still got a lot of thing. I'm just having to double check, Matt, what we did on our 0-60, because they're claiming 2.7. And I knew you were going to ask me this, and I can't off the top of my head remember exactly how fast it went in a straight line. I think we were around 2.5. So we moderately beat their time. But, I mean, it's still brutally fast. All these things are brutally fast, right?
Yeah, I mean, what you're saying about it's the traction issues in that type of tire, even that type of speed is blistering fast. But I guess when you start to crunch the numbers, when you put the skinny kind of all-terrain tire on there, what does that do to the stopping distance? Because it's a big, heavy car, right, with a ton of power. It can get up to speed very quickly, but does it have enough grip to stop?
Well, I mean, basically when we did the stopping from 60, you know, it was 127 feet, which is very much on the long side for a modern car. But a lot of that's to do with the all-season tires. Now we're going to talk later about the, you know, Cayman GT4 RS that I drove the other day.
And
what a lot of people not as kind of passionate about this as we all are and a lot of the listeners are, tires make such a critical component. to how a car behaves. And the Cayman was on Pilot Cup Sport 2 R tyres, which are basically super soft, hand-cut slicks for the road.
Yeah.
And that makes an enormous difference to braking and lateral grip. And in order to increase the range, the Lucid was on these all-season tyres. So, you know, we did match the 2.8 to 60, but the stopping distance of, you know, the stopping distance wasn't great. And on the skid pad, we were well under 1G, which is, which is not great either. But that's very, very tight. That's very, very tire limited. I think we did a 0.89G, which is kind of respectable for a sedan. But, you know, a sports sedan is pulling over 1G. And I think the Tesla Plaid was well over 1G.
I mean, these are all impressive numbers, but I kind of feel like with the range that vehicle has compared to everything else out there, right? We're not nitpicking, you know, 5, 10, 15 miles of extra range here. Like Lucid is arguably so much further ahead than most of the competitors that are maybe floating around 320, you know, 300 to 350 range. If they're at 500 plus in the range version, if you put the sport tires on there with a little bit more grip and better handling, better stopping, I mean, even if you drop down to 450 range, like, isn't this still like the car at this point, right?
It is, Matt. I mean, the other thing that, you know, we've talked a bit about some of the issues with the car, but there are some, as I said, there are some fundamentals that are fantastic. If you look at the efficiency, and sooner or later, we've all got to shut up about range, because range is just a function of like how big the battery is and then how well you optimize it. Right. Efficiency is actually the real driver of how good a vehicle is, if you like. And the Lucid Air range, we measured at 28.3 kilowatt hours per 100 miles. Now, the Mercedes-Benz EQS 450 Plus, that does 29.5, so it's significantly worse, and doesn't have anything like the power of the Lucid. I mean, in some ways, that just shows how disappointed we were with the Merc, which we all expected to be, you know, to be superb, and has been really disappointing. But the Lucid, you know, there's some fundamentally really, really good and clever engineering in this car, and I think when they get the build right and when they get the, you know, sort out some of the little niggles, this, you know, this is a proper car brand with some, you know, some proper engineering chops behind it.
You know, I haven't had a chance to dig into the company itself too much, but does Lucid have, I guess the easy way to say it, does Lucid have the infrastructure and the money to solve these problems? Like, where are you going to get these things serviced? What sort of infrastructure is there? Do they have cash on hand? Like, is this company going to make it? Is this one of the ones that's going to make it?
Yeah, I think I genuinely think it is. I mean, if you look at how it's funded, I mean, initially it was backed by Saudi billions. Then they did a special purpose acquisition company, or SPAC, which I know has been all the, without getting into the technicalities, has been kind of all the rage of how to fund a startup. And, you know, depending on which day you look, you know, when I wrote the piece, it was valued about $40 billion, which was about the same as Rivian. And I know, you know, with the market has been up and down like a, well, not so much up, more down like mm-hmm. a yo-yo.
Yeah.
Not really like a yo-yo, just down.
Just down.
Just thank down. Just down. But yeah, I think they are, Matt. I think there's enough money behind it. I think there's enough expertise behind it that, you know, I genuinely don't think it's going anywhere. You know, I think of all the startups at the moment, Lucid, Rivian, obviously Tesla's not really a startup anymore. You know, and then you're sort of seeing Fisker on the rails and all the Chinese brands and everything else. But yeah, I think it's a proper company and here to stay for sure.
Okay. Yeah. Bill, what do you think? What do you think of the Lucid?
I that's the best news I've heard. I mean, you know, if they have the capital and the ability, if they have the capital and they have some of these new gimmicks that are good enough, then they can accomplish what they set out to accomplish in the beginning, hopefully in a short period of time. And, you know, I'm extremely interested in every single thing he said, because, you know, obviously being a larger than normal human being, that's that's a huge opportunity to get into a new vehicle on the cutting edge that has the range that they do and the performance that they do. And I was just curious to hear all of that. I mean, I come out of it very positive, because I respect his opinion, obviously, a great deal. And it's tantalizing. I mean, I've been waiting for numbers on that car, and I've been actually waiting for him to get his hands on it to give us the reality of it. But, you know, if it's that big and that technologically advanced and they have the capital to make it right, then, you know, I'm positively anxious. So
The building is the hard bit. It really is. Yeah. And it's interesting, like Fisker have gone a different way on this, where Fisker are actually getting it built by a company called Magnester in Austria, who also build things like Mercedes GLB. They're building the new Ineos. And, you know, it might cost you a bit more, but you basically probably got a guaranteed product, because these guys really know how to build cars. Doing it from scratch is super difficult. And you need to get cash flowing in. I mean, you guys know this, you're entrepreneurs. You've got to get cash flowing in. So often we saw this, we saw this from McLaren, even going back in the day. You know, the MP412C was launched too early because they had to get it to market and start to, so they've probably done a bit of that here. It was probably launched a bit early. They've got some early adopters who will probably just soak up the adulation of having the latest new, the latest thing.
But it worked.
And then do what Tesla did.
Didn't it work? You know, with them coming out early and professing all those numbers, even if after you've gotten in it, it has its quirks, then they sure did shock the market with the numbers that they were throwing out and get the attention and probably the capital behind it.
Yeah, the weird thing about it, and I think is not, you know, has been they've got a lot of, let's say they've been given a pretty free ride in the media. I think they've been, you know, they've been focusing on influencers. They've been, you know, people haven't, I know people have had various problems with the vehicle and not many people have talked about it. Right. And, you know, our view as Edmunds is we're on behalf of the consumer, and, you know, we don't give Ford a free ride. We certainly don't give Tesla a free ride. We don't give Mercedes a free ride. So, you know, if you're spending 170 grand on the car, you need to know what you're buying. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we called it as it was. And it's, that's the challenge. You know, how long will it take them to get it right? And, you know, I hope by the time they get into the $80,000, $90,000 car, then, you know, there's sort of some of these problems as a scale for production. But, you know, you look around the world at the moment and nobody can build a car. I mean, I'm not just talking about building it right, but there's just, it's chaos out there. I mean, I did the Ford Lightning launch and Ford has shut the order book. And I said in the video, I know you saw it, it's like the last time I drove a Ford you couldn't buy, it was called the GT.
Yeah.
It's insane. I'm driving an F-150 truck, where if you walk into a dealer tomorrow and say, I want to, you know, he's saying, I haven't got one, I can't have one. I mean, it's crazy. It's an extraordinary, extraordinary market at the moment. It really is.
It is, but what I must say about Lucid overall is that as the three of us sit here as car guys, the numbers that they originally professed and the quality they originally professed, and I know you have to treat every car, every manufacturer exactly the same on a level playing field, but I do believe, and you can hear it in all of us, that we're just hoping that it can be true as car guys, right? Because it seems like it's got the combination of old versus new, old and new a little bit, you know, and the astronomical numbers they came out with in the beginning. I mean, I'm just hoping it's true. That's why we're not, I don't think we're giving it any more. I think the only reason why we're giving it more of a chance is because we want it to happen. That's all.
Yeah. I think that's right, Bill. And I think, you know, we all love the industry. We love the products, and you want it to succeed. You want it to be good, because it's kind of, you know, it's that plucky startup that we can all kind of associate with. And it looks cool. I mean, I haven't driven a car in a long time that got that much attention.
Yeah.
You know, I think there's so much of it. There's so much of it to like. And, you know, we're buying one. Edmunds is buying one.
Yeah.
It's actually on its way. It was supposed to be on its way from Texas. And it should be with us any day. In fact, as soon as this is over, I'm going to send an email to Chase and say, you know, oi, where's the
motor? That's awesome.
I mean,
if
the warranty issues don't become a financial detriment to the company. I think it's, you know, they've got some growing to do. But yes, the car excites us. As enthusiasts, it's fascinating. We're looking at so many car companies coming out with EVs that, you know, they're
don't excite.
I mean, they're fine in their 200-mile ranges, and they're trying to get it all into the, you know, $50,000 range. And then we've got, you know, a Rimac that's a couple of million bucks and batshit crazy fast. And then all of a sudden you get presented with a Lucid that goes, oh yeah, for, you know, 100 plus, you know, 150, anywhere between 90 and, you know, whatever, 200,000, which is not $2 million, right? And go, yeah, and it's getting the range, and it's getting performance numbers, and it's got space in it. And it's like, yeah, it deserves the attention that it's getting.
We're all secretly rooting for it.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean that we're giving it slack, right? We just, you know, we're giving it time to catch up. Yeah. Personally, that's how I feel.
Yeah, and you know, they are out there. The weird thing at the moment, and we've just driven the Toyota BZ4X, which is not the best name ever for a car. It is, I had to look it up to make sure I got it right. The weird thing on all of this, if you think about where the Japanese brands were on, when I worked for the Honda Formula One team a bunch of years ago, it was all about the Earth Dreams. I was part of that whole Earth Dreams project. And, you know, they were leading the way in environmentalism. Honda, Toyota, you know, Toyota, you think about the Prius, it owned hybrid, didn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're so late to the party on the EV stuff. And now you hear of them deals with GM for platform sharing and stuff. And I think that's been the biggest shock of all, is like, you almost imagine that the Japanese brands would have been leading the charge on this, and they're just not.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. And for startup companies to be such a worthy competitor to the legacy brands has been interesting. And we'll get into that in a second.
If the Lucid can fix the build issues,
yeah,
it is better than Mercedes EQS, which is an extraordinary achievement.
It's huge.
Yes, that's exactly kind of what we were leading up to, was how is it going to effectively compete with those brands. But tell us real quick about the Cayman, the GT4 RS. It looked fantastic at LA Auto Show. It just seems like a wildly fun enthusiast car, and where Porsche has always kind of held the Cayman back a little bit so it would never leapfrog the 911. And now it just kind of seems like, we're so close to making the Caymans electric, fuck it, let's just make the coolest Cayman out there, right?
I remember, like, when I started my job, there was an Australian journalist who really esteemed journalist, Gaggle Peter Robinson, who turned to me and said, I can't do an Australian accent. He basically says, you know what, mate, every car is a shitbox until proven otherwise. And I've always kind of held that as a mantra, and we talk about that a lot. And then you get in, like, the GT4 RS, and you go, ooh, so, where's the issues here?
Yeah.
Obviously, as you know, I drove the GT3 at Road Atlanta last year, and it's a wild, wild ride. We measured the interior noise at 103 decibels. Now, anything above 85 is apparently bad for your ears. But, you know, and it's not a linear curve, decibels. So it is brutally loud. And all the noise, it's a bit different to a GT3 because the air intakes are basically like in stereo around your ears.
Yeah.
What you're actually hearing is much more intake, whereas on a 911, you hear a lot more exhaust. It's off the scale. The braking is the best. It's the best braking we've ever recorded. And around our test track, it's like where we normally brake, you have to kind of like count to two and then hit the anchors. It's the grip's phenomenal. It's not as the ride is stiff, but works on the road.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the 911's got more tech. It's got more, you know, it's got rear wheel steering and things like that. So is it a sophisticated GT3? Probably not. Is it more fun in a very kind of visceral way? Yeah. I mean, I drove it all day at the test track and I was knackered at the end of it. It's so loud. It's just like it's a toy. They're not trying to pretend it's anything other. You could take it for a weekend away. It's still a Porsche. It would handle it. You know, 9,000 RPM, super loud, mid-engined, but also a tiny little car. You forget how small a Cayman is these days, which makes it super agile. 493 horsepower. Yeah, I mean, they basically said, right, next, as you say, next one's electric. all right, then build it.
Yeah. You know,
shut up, marketing guys. Go build it.
What I love about this is unlike Lucid being a new company, this is Porsche just kind of laying down the gauntlet and saying, we are the best at what we do, and we just want to remind you. Every once in a while, we like to remind you. And now we're just, with a sledgehammer, we're reminding you how good we are at what we do. And the time, the experience, the motorsports background, just, you know, the platform that they designed, they're just taking something like, you know, this came in and just making it absolutely amazing.
Yeah, we had it on our low grip surface at the test track, which was designed to simulate ice. I remember Walter Roll, who was the German double world rally champion and Porsche test driver for many, many years, still is. He's an old boy now, but just an extraordinary guy. And he remembered telling me how good a Cayman was in the snow. And on the low grip surface, we were just like sliding this thing around, and you could do a kind of a full lap as a sort of sideways in a kind of ballet fashion. It's ice dancing, I suppose, but it's a wonderful thing. It's super extreme. It's a toy, you know. It's not as easy to live with as something like a GT3 even. But, you know, the car I was in was close on 200 grand with all the toys on it and everything else. But what a thing. It's basically, I'll sit in the museum as saying, this was like everything we knew about how to build an internal combustion sports car. We threw it at this car and then we went off and did an EV. It's that car. It's really good.
And I know the thing these days is to buy up these specialties cars and park them and never drive them and let them accumulate value. But this is just one of those cars that I really wish that people that buy them really have some fun and drive it and participate in a couple of track days or you know, maybe some whatever Porsche club is doing and, you know, inviting Porsche owners out. And like, if you're only going to put, you know, 1,000 miles a year on that car, I hope you're doing it at a racetrack, because it just seems like it'd be fun. You know, if you're just going to drive it a little bit, you know, drive it to the limit a little bit.
And it does that amazing Porsche thing that, you know, we take it down the track, we thrash it all day, we do all the performance figures, and then, you know, you cruise it back to the office.
Yeah. Right. It's funny because out here in LA where we are, it's like that's the car. Like, you drive it to Willow Springs, you race the piss out of it, and you drive it home back to LA. You know,
and you know, we talk about, oh, the Lucid did this or the Plaid did this. You know, this thing still did 0-60 in 3.5 seconds, and we were slightly disappointed. We think it was a little to do with the surface, the day, and the tires, so maybe it wasn't quite optimal. But you know, you're never going to get in this thing, oh, we'll do it with a bit more power. And I think on the on lateral grip, it was 0.01 of a G off the Lamborghini Huracan STO that we had in,
yeah,
which is twice the price.
Yeah,
so. It's a cool thing.
All right, so now
buy the house, but sell the house, sell the house, buy the car.
That's it. Sell the house, buy the car. All right, so the middle of the ground now is Ford F-150 Lightning. There was a driving event. Apparently, you were right in Bill's backyard. You didn't go bang on his fence and see his zoo, but you guys were very close to where he was. And now we're talking about Ford, a legacy car company, taking a vehicle that they have a lot of experience in selling and building over the years, electrifying it. You know, we're all kind of excited about what it potentially could be, but you had a chance to drive it at the event. What's your thoughts on the Lightning? Assuming you could order one.
I didn't realize quite how close I was to you. I put something on Instagram, and Matt was like, I think you're literally over Bill's fence. But I had no idea. I was only there for sort of a day and a half.
I was going to say, Bill probably would have heard you guys out there, but the damn things are electric.
Yeah, most likely. Yeah.
It's a beautiful part of the world. It's, it's, do you know what that's really interesting about it? We always like chart out the year and what's going to be really big news. And we would have all bet our mortgages on the combination of, like, we know what people are interested in, trucks, EVs. And so you've got an electric F-150, and we're like, this video is going to do like hundreds of thousands. Everybody's going to be talking about it on social. Very little. Like, I think the video's done like 100,000 views or something. The Lucid one's done, 350 or something. But we were really disappointed by the response. I don't know if that's because people feel like they've heard it all before, or they're sick of it, or I don't know, but it hasn't captured the imagination like we thought it would, because it should, and because it's actually a really good thing. it's great to drive. It's got independent rear suspension, which the normal F-150 doesn't. It's super fast, you know, 0 to 60 in about four bit seconds. Mm-hmm. It's super quiet. It's super refined, super comfortable. You have all the practical benefits of a normal F-150 plus the huge frunk. You've got all the power supplies on board. The only thing it doesn't do, and I think this is really important, we did some tow testing while we were there, and we did some hauling testing. I towed like a 8,300-pound boat, and immediately the range calculator went from 300-something miles to like 160. Now, if you're serious about towing a race car or boat or whatever it may be, you're going to have to be thinking about, like, where do I charge this thing every 100 to 150 miles? And at the moment, the infrastructure can't cope with that. Or even if you want to take it to the lake and come back, if that's 100 miles plus, then it's going to be getting a bit hairy. So that was the big issue with it, that actually if you start using it for like as a hauling, towing truck, then the range will really suffer. But if you just want a nice big truck for, you know, fetching the kangaroo food or whatever it is, then, you know, it's great. And of course, there's something really nice about being, particularly we did some off-roading, there's something really nice about being in a silent truck off-road.
Yeah, yeah. Look, I was thinking about the towing and stuff. I saw your comments about that. And I don't know, it's just kind of like the same thing I would say, you know, you're driving your 220-mile range EV around town and you want to take a trip to Vegas or something. Then, rent a car, rent a Tahoe, rent something big that's, you know, plenty of room and fill it with snacks and whatever. Kind of the same thought if you're going to hit the lake, you know, a couple of times a year.
There's no way. You buy a truck to use it as a truck. Come on.
Well, what I'm saying is you do use it as a truck, but you use it as a truck certainly around town within limits. And for the workforce out there that lives in their truck and is doing stuff around town all the time, even with a trailer and, you know, stuff in the truck, or you're building your big shark cage and you're filling it up with gear and, you know, if you're getting 150 to 200 miles of range per day around LA in your work truck, you know, we'd like it to be better, but it's not terrible. Like, they must have given some thought into the amount of range, because, you know, how many times if we keep hearing, hey, you only need 200 miles of range, you're not even going to use that most times during the day anyway, so you can charge a car up at night. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I agree with you. The truck seems interesting. You know, we all wish it had 500-mile range. I still think we're all like 2 years away from pretty much all the EVs being in the 400 to 500-mile range. You know, we're just a few years away as we're starting to figure out how to cool them, how to make them lighter, how to make them more aerodynamic, battery technology, software efficiency, like all these little things that are going to creep into the new versions of all EVs.
But in the truck space, if your range goes down 25 to 50% if you're towing, I think that's a no-go.
I think Bill's right.
Okay.
I think, you know, that's the elephant in the room at the moment. Maybe when the infrastructure catches up and you feel, then the anxiety goes away. Because Ford was making the argument that the range is no more affected on an EV than it is in a gas car. So, you know, if you're towing with your F-150 EcoBoost or whatever, then you're going to lose, you know, your fuel consumption is going to halve or double, depending which way you look at it. But there's a gas station every 100 miles in most places in the country, and that's the critical difference. But just if you can fix that problem, just judged objectively as a truck, as a thing, you know, that's the best F-150 I've driven. It's a terrific thing. And it, you know, it's a proper full size truck.
In other words, it would sell in California, but it wouldn't. There's no way that thing would sell in Texas because 90% of the people tow. It's just
Ford. I think said of their F, because they research all it. I think they said 75% of F-150 owners tow overall. And which kind of, you know, is what you're saying, Bill, an 80% tow less than 10,000 pounds. So the max it will tow, depending on your configuration, is about 10,000 pounds. And, you know, so Yeah, I mean, there's loads of clever stuff on board. Like, you've got built-in weight scales, so you can test, you know, see how much your load is in the back, and every single car is pre-loaded with its each by VIN with, you know, its max payload, depending on, you know, what options you've got and stuff. It's great in so many ways, but yeah, they've got to solve that issue, and maybe that's why they'll, you know, sell 150,000 a year, not 900,000 a year or 600,000 a year, whatever it is.
And it's an interesting point, something that Tesla's cornered the market on. But you're right. The Ford engineers, everyone at Ford, sat down and literally made the best possible EV truck that they can make. And, you know, like you said, put it up against, you know, a 5-liter Ford or an EcoBoost. The towing range is about the same, except you can stop at a gas station and 7 minutes later be on your way. It seems like Ford did everything they possibly could do within their control, because they can't control the charging infrastructure. And I don't know why, for the life of us, the companies that are building the infrastructure, for the most part, it seem terrible. I mean, it's just constantly pulling up to charging stations and they're out of order and they don't work, or your credit card doesn't work. And it's like just flaw after flaw after flaw. And it's just like, what's going on here? Like, where are these companies? And I haven't done the research on the charging infrastructure companies, ChargePoint and Charge America or whatever they are. But it's like, who's behind them? How are they getting funding? Who's building their equipment? Because we keep talking about having chargers available, but we're definitely going to have a conversation soon about making quality chargers, right? It's like, how is this stuff going to work? More frustrating than no charger is a charger that you think is there and it doesn't work, because now you're driving in and you got 13 miles left on your battery, and you think it's, you know, there's light at the end of the tunnel in Blythe where there's a charger, and you realize, well, that goddamn thing doesn't work. So now what do you do?
Well, the other thing is, if you're towing, normally most chargers, you can't arrive with a massive boat on the back and pull up and charge it.
Yeah, that was the other issue. So, and, you know, then do you have to unhook that shit and leave it off of the side of the road, you know, a quarter mile away from the charging station or whatever. Yeah, this came up with some of the Tesla charging stations as well. It's like, what if you have gear, and what if you're towing something, or, you know, you get into a certain angle or certain way, and it's just like, I don't know.
Well, the other big thing that's winding me personally up at the moment is, I think there's a lot of misinformation around so-called level 2 chargers, the sort of thing that you have at home, which are fine if you're plugging it in at 8 o'clock at night and you leave at 8 o'clock in the morning, that's okay. But, you know, every shopping center and Whole Foods or whatever it is installing these chargers and saying, hey, we got EV chargers. It's hopeless in anything with a bigger battery. It's a waste of time. You know, you're going to add a handful of miles if you go do your grocery shopping.
Right.
The only chargers that really matter in something like an F-150 Lightning or a Lucid or a Rivian, whatever, are the fast chargers. So they've got to stop saying we've got, you know, 10,000 new chargers. You know, actually, how many fast chargers have you got? Because that's all I care about.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, you know, living out here in California, in the West Side, we're in Venice. I can go to Santa Monica, go out to dinner, charge it in the Santa Monica Mall, and when I leave, I got just about enough charge to cover my trip to the mall and back. Right. You know, like, hey, you went there, you had dinner, whatever, you're walking around, you're out for two and a half hours, you come back, you got 9 miles of charge. Right. I was like, well, it was about 5 miles each way, so it only cost me a mile of charge, you know. So, yeah, something to think about that. And by the way, that's not the 120 volt, you know, plug in. That's what you're talking about. Like, you plug into the infrastructure.
Yeah, I'm talking about the 240. The sort of thing that you put in at home with, you know, 50 amps or 60 amp breaker or something like that. And you know, and it's, yeah, it's, and the Lightning that will give you like a free home charging with, the Lightning's got some interesting tech where it basically has two chargers on board, one plug, but two chargers. But then you still need to install that at home. And then you're going to need probably 100 amps in your, you know, 100 amp fuse. I'm no electrician, in your box. Now, like, my whole home system at the moment is like 100, and I've got to upgrade it to 200 so I can then get like a 50 amp charger. But, you know, you can't, you've got to, there's all this game that you've got to play. And we've all got to do it, right? It's going to happen. And it's going to get better and better. But it's kind of frustrating because the product's great, and then you're still fighting this infrastructure issue.
Yeah, that was actually one of the things that's come up a few times on the show with Adam Carolla, him being, you know, having a construction background. He was like, yeah, I get it. He goes, I want the charger and I want it to reverse power. I want the lightning to power my house, and I want my house to power my Ford Lightning. He goes, but I got to cut half my garage down just to get enough juice in here. And he goes, and of course, it's always like the breaker box is on one side and then the plug has to be installed on the other side. And, you know, here we are $7,000 later and you're still doing wiring on your house, right? Like the amount of power that, you know, to get to what you're talking about, this 80, 100 amp power source in your house for your vehicle, that's not an easy feat. I get like a lot of new homes and apartment complexes and stuff that are starting to realize what's ahead of them. But, but retrofitting something that's older is a pain in the ass for sure. I'm sure, Bill, you've given it thought onto the garage that you're building, how much power you can bring into that, because you're trying to future-proof it. You're looking at that garage going, hey, this is what I need now, but what do I need in 10 years from now? Right? And even if you moved someplace else and you sold the place, right, the new owners are like, what sort of future proofing do we have? Like, we have this really awesome garage, and does it handle, you know, 50 amps max on a charging station? Like, and then, you know, and what you have to go through to get that amount of power to the building.
Believe me, right now is absolutely the time to take every one of those into consideration, so you don't have to retrofit afterwards. But, you know, who knows what's going on 5 years in the future, let alone even further than that, but you do whatever you can.
We're fitting a fast charger at the.
Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, Matt, I didn't mean to cut you off. We're fitting a fast charger at the office because we can't wait 20 hours for a Lucid to recharge, and then we're stuck in the permit. Mm-hmm. So, like, this has been dragging on for months now because nobody wants to sign off the permit and the inspection. It's half for God's sake, you know.
Listen, even in the warehouse that I'm renting, it's an older complex, and I had the electrician over there just to wire up some outlets. And I said, hey, at some point, I'm going to do an electric car in here. And he said, well, where do you want it? I said, well, right next to the garage door. On one side of the garage door is the panel, and then up and over on the other side of the garage door is where the plug is. And he's looking at it and he's like, well, look, you know, at the panel, you can't get that much power. You can get about 50 or 60 amps at the panel. I said, all right, well, you know, it's not the best solution, but it's better than nothing. And he said, yeah, but the wiring is only going to carry about 30 to 40 amps. You know, I think he said 40 amps, 45 amps max. And I was like, all right, so that's where I'm at. So now we'd have to go through, change the wiring up and around the garage door just to get to the 50 amp. And if I wanted more than that, I don't know what he's got to do. He's got to go out of the panel into the, you know, to the meters of the big thing at the complex itself and start cutting up. And by the way, that's a lot of work for a place that we're renting.
Exactly.
You know? Anyway, it was a thought. I appreciate the thoughts on the Lucid, certainly the Porsche, the Lightning. Before we wrap up, I know you got your hands on a few other things, but what else do you want to tell us? What's going on?
We didn't even talk Nissan Z, which we've just driven. We just launched a video on that.
How is that?
There's just tons of stuff going on.
How is
I didn't drive it myself, to be honest. I mean, general feedback was that it's on the same chassis as the 370Z. So there's a few compromises there, but it's still a 400 horsepower rear drive manual coupe. So it's still a fun thing that I personally think looks pretty cool as well. What else we got going on? We just took delivery of the Rivian. You're gonna have to have me back on. We took delivery of the Rivian.
Yeah.
Lucid's on its way. So yeah, it's a really busy time. I've got to hot foot it back to LA and, you know, leave the mother country.
I'm interested in you guys getting some time with the Rivian because we talked about range, but you had mentioned several times efficiency, and I'm hearing things about the Rivian not being very efficient, how much power it takes per mile. Although I'm really starting to see a lot of them on the road. Like I've mentioned before, we've got one of their offices near us in Venice, and I'm seeing them on the 405 around the neighborhood, parking lots. And every time I see it, I'm like, you know, I kind of like it. Like, it's a cool looking truck. It's kind of a good size for around town. And you know, it stands out. People is getting their attention. But yeah, I want to see after a little bit of time of you guys owning one, actually owning one, not a press car for a few days, but just owning it and seeing what you guys think.
Yeah, the one that we had, Matt, just as a parting shot, the Lucid did 28.3 kilowatt hours per 100 miles. The Rivian, 46.9. So 28.3 to 46.9. Now, I know it's a truck.
Yeah.
But still a... You know, that the Rivian remains the least efficient vehicle we've ever tested on the EV, and I know it's a truck, so it'd be interesting to see what the Lightning does when we get our paws on one.
And look, you could always make arguments as the technology is going to get better over time. If you have a house and it's solar power, and you're trying to get some of the less expensive to free energy, whatever. But we got to be able to compare these vehicles apples to apples somehow, and. You know, we've always got our performance and handling testing. We've got range testing, and efficiency is going to be one of those things as well. So,
already is. Edmunds.com/range.
Yeah. Wait, that's all the cars now?
All the range and efficiency. I can't believe you haven't got it bookmarked.
Well, I've got Edmunds.com/news. I've got that one. That's the one I go to all the time.
So Edmunds.com/range.
All right. <good. laughs> Thanks for that. Alistair, always a pleasure. Enjoy Europe, because I know you're not just parking it in the UK. You've got family and friends to see. Enjoy your warm beer.
I'm just buying all my Jubilee. I'll bring you a Jubilee beer back. Swap you for a Bravago.
Okay, let's do it. All right, guys. Thanks so much. Until next time, keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com.
Would you love to save money on insurance? Well, of course, who doesn't love a good deal? Well, when it comes to great rates on insurance for everything, GEICO can help. Insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, RV, even homeowners, condo, and renters coverage. Save even more with a special discount when you bundle coverages. Plus, add the easy-to-use GEICO mobile app and 24-hour roadside assistance, and the switch to GEICO becomes a no-brainer. Switch today and see how you can save. Simply go to geico.com to get a rate quote or contact your local agent.